This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, October 15th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums. Support for KUAF comes from Northwest Arkansas Media, publishers of Northwest Arkansas Times, Springdale and Rogers Morning News, Benton County Daily Record, and the Northwest Arkansas edition of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, offering dedicated and comprehensive election coverage at nwavote.com and a political, business, and entertainment blog online at nwasource.com. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, how one book can connect an entire region. This year, the One Book, One Community Project examines the book The Working Poor, Invisible in America. Plus, a new documentary about Fayetteville has its premiere later this week. And we'll have a question that might help you win the last two tickets we have for tomorrow night's Avett Brothers concert at the Amp. But first, Governor Mike Beebe continues to try to build support in the legislature for an expansion of Medicaid under the federal health care law. As officials are preparing for a shortfall of up to $400 million by 2014, the governor says the expansion would help the state. In his weekly radio address, the governor notes it will require bipartisan support.
There must be political consensus on Medicaid expansion in the legislature. Otherwise, we could not appropriate and spend those federal funds. All of these potential sources of additional Medicaid support may not resolve the shortfall completely. In the current political climate, the only other viable step will be cuts in some programs. If it comes to that, we will work with the legislature to minimize the impact of any such cuts.
Meanwhile, in the Republican weekly address, State Representative Charlie Collins of Fayetteville says his party's key concern in next year's legislative session will be reducing taxes.
Our plan eliminates two brackets and raises the income level for the highest bracket. This gives all workers tax relief and simplifies our system. The result will be a dramatic 60% tax cut for low-income workers, a strong 35% tax break for middle-income working families, and a more modest 14% tax reduction for high-income workers and job creators.
Collins says it would also make the state more competitive in the region because he says the state has higher taxes compared with neighboring states. Collins is seeking re-election for House District 84 against Democratic challenger Adela Gray. Friday, Tyson Foods of Springdale announced the creation of a new auditing program to monitor the treatment of animals at livestock and poultry farms that supply the company. Tyson Foods president and CEO Donnie Smith says that the Farm Check program is a step the company is taking to give consumers assurance their food is being produced responsibly.
We think two important ways to do that are by, number one, conducting on-farm audits while, of course, also continuing, number two, to research ways to improve how farm animals are raised. See, we know that the farmers who supply us are the best in the world. And I think these audits are going to verify that. But if we do find problems, then we want to work with the farmer to fix those problems right away.
Smith says the company is interested in improving the quality of life of the animals it processes and that the Farm Check program will look at the well-being of the animals through their lifespans from breeding to harvest. Fayetteville residents will soon have another place to drop off recyclables in the city. City planning officials are advancing plans to construct a drop-off facility near Leverett Avenue, a corridor home to several apartment complexes without curbside recycling service. Don Marr is chief of staff with the Fayetteville City.
It's right there at the stoplight of the new trail crossing on North Street, so it's very conveniently located to many multifamily dwellings on Leverett and Gregg as well. It will have a wrought iron fence. There'll be containers for the various materials that we collect at that location. It will have manned hours, and we're still working out the details of what type of hours we will offer.
Marr says the city currently has about a 56% participation rate in the residential curbside recycling programs, and about 60% of people using the current drop-off facility on 15th Street are county residents. He says the goal of the new recycling facility is to get more residents to participate in recycling programs. Friday, the Arkansas Razorback soccer team dropped a 3-1 decision to number 9 in the country, Texas A&M, but Arkansas rebounded yesterday with a 1-0 defeat of Auburn in Fayetteville. the first win for Arkansas over Auburn since 2000. With all of its home games finished, the Razorbacks return to the road to finish the regular season, facing Missouri and Mississippi over the weekend and then LSU next week. The Arkansas men's cross-country team had a respectable finish Friday at the Wisconsin Adidas Invitational in Madison. The 19th-ranked Razorbacks placed three runners inside the top 20. The Razorbacks finished the competition tied for fifth place with 17th-ranked Columbia and finished ahead of number 1-ranked Wisconsin, 5th-ranked Iona College, and number 10 Syracuse. The race was Arkansas's third and final of the regular season. The Razorbacks will defend their championship status in the SEC Cross-Country Championships October 26th at Percy Warner Park in Nashville. Weekend was also busy for the women's Razorback cross-country team. Number 11 Arkansas took the team title Saturday at the 24th annual Chili Pepper Festival at Agri Park in Fayetteville. The team placed five runners in the top 20. The victory is the team's first at the event since 2006. Ranked number 1 in the South Central region, Arkansas will host the NCAA Regional November 9th at Agri Park. But first, they'll compete in the SEC Championships in Nashville later this month. And finally, the University of Arkansas volleyball team ended the weekend with a three-set loss to Tennessee at Barnhill Arena yesterday afternoon. The loss drops the team's record to 14-6 overall, 5-4 in SEC play. The team will continue the conference season next weekend on the road at Kentucky and Mississippi State. Clear, lows in the mid-50s tonight. Tomorrow, clear, highs in the lower to upper 70s. And for tomorrow night, clear in the evening, then partly cloudy, 20% chance of rain with lows in the upper 50s. This month, the University of Arkansas, the City of Fayetteville, and Northwest Arkansas communities are engaged in a conversation about David Shipler's book, The Working Poor, Invisible in America. Several conversations about or relating to the book are scheduled through October. The Pulitzer Prize-winning author will be in Fayetteville to speak on campus and off later this month. This is the fourth year for One Book, One Community, project established by Kevin Fitzpatrick, Jones Chair in Community in the U of A Department of Sociology and Criminal Justice, and David Jolliffe, Brown Chair in English Literacy in the Department of English. David Jolliffe says it's modeled after similar programs at schools such as the University of Alabama Birmingham and DePaul University.
It really does give, particularly I think first-year students who are coming to the University of Arkansas, it's kind of an intellectual center for them, something to talk about that they've read the book in common. And I would say there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, what's your major, where are you from, do you want to pledge as a conversation starter. But if you can say, what's your major, where are you from, you want to, where are you going to pledge, and by the way, have you read this book, it's a really good way to get conversation going among first-year students in particular.
And, of course, it spreads out beyond just first-year students.
Sure does. Yeah, they are, the first-year students tend to be our largest group of readers in this. But every year, depending on the books we've chosen, the book has found a home in other places in the curriculum. And then certainly the cooperation that we have from the Fayetteville Public Library and including it with all of their book clubs and then sponsoring something they call the Gathering of the Book Clubs on the Friday of the author's visit, when they put all of those book clubs together for a luncheon and the author addresses them, that has turned out to be a really nice community extension of the whole project.
This year's book is particularly interesting and perhaps, I don't know how you make this comparison, but perhaps the most serious one you've had yet.
I think it is, Kyle. It's interesting. We decided this year to try to select a book that had something to do with the economy. We knew that this was an election year. We knew that no doubt the major issue in the election was going to be the economy. This is what people wanted to talk about. So we set ourselves to work to find a book that spoke to an economic issue without holding out a particular brief, without having saying, I have a particular soapbox I want to climb up on. It was not as easy as it sounds to find such a book. You know, many books about the economy have a particular platform that they want to preach. I think this book became a favorite of the committee for this reason, and your listeners, of course, will know this, that during this election year, everybody's talking about the middle class. Nobody's talking about the poor. The poor seem to have sort of dropped off the radar screen, and yet they are such a, that population is such a vital cog in all discussions of economics. So when we found David Shipler's book, we said, you know, this is the book that we'd like to work with this year. So it is, I think, the most serious and the most comprehensive in its cover of its topic.
The poor don't have many lobbyists.
I think the poor have basically no lobbyists, yes. Right.
The idea with the One Community, the One Book, One Community Project is to get as many people reading and talking about it as possible. And in that endeavor, you've had some events already.
We have a number of events coming up over the next couple of weeks. This coming week, we actually have a wonderful week, have three events. On the 17th, which is Wednesday at 7, we have the second of the events sponsored by Feed Fayetteville, co-sponsored. It's a film and a discussion on the economics of happiness. Mm-hmm. Hershey Garner is going to introduce it, and he said, you know, here's the question. What is the connection between material prosperity and happiness? How can we actually talk about that? So that will be at 7 p.m. on Wednesday night, the 17th, in the law school in room 328. Thursday night is something that I'm particularly interested in. This is a lecture and a discussion on the connection between poverty and schooling.
It runs very deep.
It does. And as a matter of fact, two of the chapters in Shipler's book speak to that directly. We have a guest speaker, a man named Paul Thomas from Furman University, who has been writing about this connection in a very, very eloquent way. That's at 7 p.m. Thursday night, the 18th, in the Grad Ed Auditorium. And then on Friday, the 19th, at 3:30 p.m., is the final of the events sponsored by Feed Fayetteville. And this is the first screening in this area of a new film called Escape Fire, The Fight to Rescue American Healthcare. And obviously, when we're taking a look at the great controversy about the Affordable Care Act now, which I guess the president himself is even calling it Obamacare
these days.
But when people are taking a look at the continued viability of that, and particularly its relevance for the poor, we wanted to introduce that issue to the community. So Hershey Garner, again, will be showing the initial screening of this very wonderful film called Escape Fire. And then he and Rob Leflar from the law school will be talking about the Affordable Care Act and the poor. On Saturday the 20th is Make a Difference Day on our campus, sponsored by Angela Oxford's wonderful Office of Community Engagement. And this will involve several hundred University of Arkansas students and people from throughout the area doing various kind of service projects to make a difference. And the issue of poverty will be central to those. And then we have just one event next week prior to Shipler himself on the 22nd. The Arkansas Advocates for Children and Family will be showing a film called Waging a Living in room 149 of the J.B. Hunt Transit Building. And someone named Kellum's involved.
I was going to say,
that.
Full disclosure, my wife is the...
She's the moderator of that discussion. Yes. But Susanna O'Daniel has been very good, along with Laura, to put that together. And then on the night of Thursday, the 25th, David Shipler himself will be here. And it'll be at 6:30 p.m. in the Verizon Ballroom in the Arkansas Union. And he'll be giving a talk, 6:30 to 8, signing books. Would be delighted to meet people who have read his book and hear what they think.
There's so many things that can come out of this. One of the most basic is there might be some 18, 19-year-old first-year students who think about reading differently.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps they've never read nonfiction closely before.
Correct.
You get a community conversation going about a topical issue. But I think for the author, too, this has to be good. I mean, the fact that you have a college town and Northwest Arkansas can spread out further talking about their work and will be very interested and will have spent a month's time talking about it before he or she arrives, that has
right.
to be engaging for them.
Oh, yeah. That's a strong benefit. And everybody whom we've had in as the guest reader says the same thing about that. First of all, it's good just in general to have a good audience who's read your book. But everybody who comes to Northwest Arkansas and the University of Arkansas, and they see how we've tried to embed this book in the university and the community, they say, wow, what a good way to make this work. And they have had really, really good discussions with our students and with the folks from the library book groups and other books that have read the work. And, of course, to return to the point you made first, I've been working for 30 years in this transition from high school to college. Most students who are graduating from high school these days have not read an entire book of nonfiction. If they have read an entire book, it's generally been a novel, mm-hmm. A textbook, of course. They read many textbooks. But for most students, this is the first opportunity they have had to read an entire book of nonfiction prose about a contemporary issue. And it's a new genre for them, but yet it's a genre that's so central to what they'll be doing in college that we think this is a good sort of transitional experience from high school to college as well.
Is there any way to track how many of the first-year students actually read it?
Well, we know how many people assign it in the
right.
sections. We can tally up the number of people who are in the seats. I would guess, Kyle, that probably in the first-year program alone, we have someplace in the neighborhood of 1,000 to 1,500 students reading the book.
in the spring you take nominations for the next.
Actually, even before that time, we are going to have a meeting, I believe it's on November 8th, when we start to get the process in motion of selecting the book for the coming year. We have decided that this coming year we are not going to be thematic. Really, the only requirements, it does need to be nonfiction because it does have to fit within the first year writing course, and that first semester writing course does focus on reading and analysis of nonfiction prose. So it needs to be nonfiction. And the author needs to be alive because it's very important that we bring the author to campus. It's very, very important, I think, for students to read a book and then hear the words coming out of the author's mouth. We like the book to be someplace around 300 pages, you know, not a tome. Mm-hmm. Most importantly, we want it to be about an issue that will really engage people intellectually and socially and have them really talking with one another. So those are really the minimal requirements.
Imagine there's no shortage of suggestions.
No, there are not. Even in the thematic years, we've had lots of really, really good suggestions. We do put out a story on the University of Arkansas Newswire when the nominations are open, and ideally you'll mm-hmm. say something about it as well. But we certainly welcome suggestions from throughout the community about mm-hmm. what we might choose.
25th, Verizon Ballroom,
correct,
which is in the Student Union.
6:30 p.m.
And that's open?
Absolutely.
To the public.
Everybody is welcome.
David Jolliffe is Brown Chair in English Literacy in the Department of English at the University of Arkansas and a co-organizer of the One Book, One Community Project. You can hear more about the events associated with this year's author and book in an audio extra you can hear at OzarksAtLarge.com. And in November, we'll air a conversation with David Shipler on Ozarks that will be recorded at the Fayetteville Public Library during his time in Northwest Arkansas. And speaking of the Fayetteville Public Library, later this week, the documentary Up From the Hills will premiere there. Earlier this month, my colleague Antoinette Grajeda and I talked to the director of the film, Larry Foley, just after the project had been completed. That conversation ahead on Ozarks at Large.
In commercial radio, in-depth means a minute 30. On much of public radio, you can hear stories stretched to 6 or 7 minutes. On Talk of the Nation, we're not talking in-depth until we've hit the half-hour mark. I'm Neil Cownan. Take your time with the discussion on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon at 1 on KUAF 91.3 FM. Arkansans are gambling more than ever. This past week, there were new financial numbers for J.B. Hunt, and the election is a mere 22 days away. Roby Brock takes care of all of that and more in his weekly recap.
I'm Roby Brock with your Talk Business Update, a recap of the biggest business and political stories of the past week. Arkansans may not be voting to expand casino operations in state this year, but that will not stop gamblers from playing the slots, electronic games of skill, or EGS wagering at Arkansas's two racetracks and casinos set a new record topping $2 billion for the year with 3 months still to go. The cumulative total of EGS wagering is the highest since the gambling began in late 2006. For all of 2011, electronic games of skill gambling at the two tracks totaled $1.9 billion. EGS wagers include video blackjack, poker, and slot machines. Bank of the Ozarks reported net income for the quarter ended September 30th of $19.3 million. That was up about 2% from a year ago. Lowell-based J.B. Hunt Transportation reported third quarter revenue was up about 11% as its net income rose nearly 14%. Net earnings rose to $78.2 million in the current quarter, and total revenue for the quarter was a little over $1.2 billion. Arkansas Best Corporation and the International Brotherhood of Teamsters have agreed to begin negotiations toward a new labor contract for about 7,800 unionized company employees. The dealing is set to begin December 18th on a contract that will expire on March 31st of next year. Most of the 7,800 are drivers, but the union membership also includes dock workers, mechanics, and office staff. Arkansas Best employs more than 10,000 overall. Entergy Arkansas said it will close a Pine Bluff Systems Operations Center by the middle of 2015, eliminating 100 jobs at the location and possibly moving some of them to either Little Rock or Jackson, Mississippi. Firestone Building Products held a ribbon-cutting ceremony at its Prescott manufacturing plant to celebrate the completion of a $36 million expansion project. The expansion project includes 52,000 square feet to the facility and 100 new jobs to the existing workforce. The University of the Ozarks Board of Trustees has elected Richard Dunsworth as the university's 25th president, effective July 1st of next year. Dunsworth, age 43, has served as vice president for enrollment at Millikan University in Illinois since 2004. He will succeed Dr. Rick Neese, who's retiring in June after a 16-year tenure as president of the private Presbyterian-affiliated university located in Clarksville, Arkansas. And finally, in politics, one of the biggest stories of the last week centered around State Representative John Hubbard, a Republican from Jonesboro. His controversial writings on slavery, education, and immigration have been at the center of state and national controversy. This week, Hubbard wrote a letter to the editor of the Jonesboro Sun, accusing Governor Mike Beebe and Attorney General Dustin McDaniel, both Democrats, of using tactics similar to Hitler and Nazis in the 1930s. Governor Beebe responded to the controversy, saying that Hubbard's comments could have a chilling effect on economic development opportunities for the Jonesboro region. McDaniel said he doesn't think Hubbard is fit for office. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Update.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Larry Foley, Emmy winner Larry Foley, who on October 19th will have his latest film endeavor, Up Among the Hills, the story of Fayetteville, premiere. Is it all done?
It's done. We shipped it away to a production company in Florida where they were making a broadcast, high-definition master, and DVDs. So It's in the can, as they say.
And that literally means that it's...
Well, when you shot things on film, we still call, you know, it a film, but there was a time when you finished a film and it physically went inside a can, but we still use the phrase.
Well, it's done, so you can't do any more to it because it's, well, in Florida. But is there something that was left out that you want to put back in, or things that you're rolling around in your head now, like, oh, I should have done this, or I should have done that?
No, you can't really be that way. My feeling, excuse me, I'm fighting allergies. My feeling is that you do the very best you can with what you have to work with and the time that you have and the resources that you have. But I want to tell you guys that I'm awfully, awfully proud of this film. I'm proud of the work that we all did on it, and I had a very creative team. You know, we worked on this thing for over 2 years, and it's a fun film. At times it is funny, at times it's poignant, but I'm really proud of it. You know, I think that's the way you want to feel when you're finished with it. Now, could we have continued to have messed with it? Well, of course, but there's another phrase that it's time to put the baby to bed, which in our case meant it's time to ship it off to Florida.
One of the members of the creative team, the narrator, President Bill Clinton, what was it like to work with him? Did you ever have to – because I imagine a lot of this was done digitally, like you'd suggest something and it would come back. Did you ever have to say, well, I'd rather you do it this way? And was that at all
intimidating? Well, what happened was we were going to go at spring break, and he didn't have time. He's a very busy man, you know.
Really?
He's incredibly busy.
Who knew?
And so we were going to fly to New York, and just before we got on the plane, we were told, don't get on the plane. The president woke up with no voice. And, you know, Bill Clinton has this issue.
Right.
And so we went back about 3 weeks later, and we were set up inside of his Harlem office because he just didn't have time to go to an audio studio. So Hyatt Tuchev, my director of photography and editor, and I were there in his Harlem office waiting on Clinton to come down the hall and to be able to do the narration. And I did ask myself, Kyle, you know, now what if he doesn't read it exactly right, you know, well, of course, I had him read a few things over, you know, and he was most gracious. And the fun parts of that afternoon when we worked with President Clinton to do the narrative happened when maybe an ambulance would drive by, there was some kind of commotion, or he would get choked, and he stopped and told a few stories, and that was really pretty cool.
I bet.
Now, this film focuses on the history of Fayetteville, and you're very familiar with this town. You've lived here for some time. Do you think it would have been different if you were asked to do a film on a place you were unfamiliar with? I mean, is there
I think it's always the same. You know, there are times when I feel like my target audience might be people who know a lot about the subject matter. Mm-hmm. That was certainly the case when I did 22 Straight a number of years ago. For me, it's like I knew a lot about the 64-65 Razorbacks. And sometimes I kind of felt like my target audience might be the guys that played on the team, to tell them a few things. So I certainly, one of my endeavors was to launch into some stories and some characters that I had heard about or in my research had picked up on. But I think if somebody has lived here their entire life and has never been anywhere else, I still think they're really going to enjoy this film and they're going to learn a few things about some folks they didn't know anything about. I'm looking at this film as a story of the character of Fayetteville as told through the characters of Fayetteville. From folks who were here in the early 1800s to some of the Civil War stories, to folks after the Civil War during Reconstruction, to the turn of the 20th century, and the middle part of the 20th century, on up until today. And one thing about this funky little town of Fayetteville, we have no shortage of characters, and we have always had a great wealth of them. And that made it a lot of fun.
When one of your films premieres, what are you doing? Do you watch the film primarily? Do you kind of spy around?
No, I've already seen it. I
know that.
I watch them. I watch people, and I'm watching to see if they're getting it where I wanted them to get it. And sometimes they do, and sometimes they get it in a different place. So I like to sit at the back of the room and just hope and pray that it sounds and looks like we want it to in the presentation, because you know you're literally vulnerable to the technical gods when this kind of thing happens. So I like to sit back and see if people get it. That's what I like to do.
And you've done so many of these documentaries. Do you constantly have 10 ideas in your head, or do you focus on this one and then as soon as this one's done, it's maybe some downtime and then you start thinking about your next project?
Well, I don't have downtime, frankly. I have three films that are coming out and another one that's in production. So, you know, there's no shortage of good stories to tell, and I tend to be seduced by them for whatever strange psychological malady that I have. But I like working on these things, you know, and I'm really just – I really am attracted to interesting characters and interesting stories. You know, this business that I'm in that I kind of made up for myself years ago, which is strange enough, is kind of like playing golf. I mean, you know, you can go out on the golf course and you can find 90-year-old people playing golf, and I may be one of them one of these days. But, you know, there's no age limit to, you know, storytelling. Storytelling is endless, and it's age old. And I just happen to like telling stories where I have the opportunity to weave the written word with the visual image and sometimes the still picture and the sounds. And one of the things that's different about Up Among the Hills is that it's like a little movie. You know, there are a lot of dramatic recreations of when the Butterfield stage came into town and on board was Waterman Ormsby, the young New York Herald reporter. And there's the story of the old scout, Charles Von Berg, playing his bugle on the East Mountain, playing taps every evening. And there's, you know, Miss Sophia Sawyer and her Fayetteville Seminary. So it literally is like a little movie. And one of the things that's been great about this project, commissioned by the Fayetteville Public Library, is that here's what I got. We want you to do the story about Fayetteville's history. Now go do it. Oh, my, was that fun.
Gosh, it would almost seem a little bit pressure, though.
Well,
but I guess
mean,
you kind of feel pressure every time because you want to get the story.
You know what? The way I look at that, Kyle, is that my reputation is on the line every time I accept a commission. One bad one and that's the end of you. So, yeah, I mean, there's always that. You just do the best you can with what you have to work with, and you know, I'm looking for teammates, and I do want to mention a few people who worked on this film with me. Hyatt Tuchev is director of photography and the editor. Beth Mack Lewis is the associate producer. I had current and former students, people like Brian Campbell, who we brought in to do a lot of effects for us. Trey Marley did some additional photography and did a fabulous job. I have like 16 different voices in this film. So the one thing that was common about all of us, whatever phase they worked on inside the production of the film, is everybody was really into it, and everybody really wanted to do their very best. And I think I told Hyatt this today. Hyatt, this is the best work you've done to date. And it really is good. But I would probably say that about everybody that worked on this, as far as I know of their work.
This weekend, as we talk here, this weekend you were awarded an Emmy. You're a multiple Emmy winner. Seven? Eight?
Five.
Five.
Just five.
Just five.
Just five.
Where do you keep them?
Well, some of them are in my office at the university, and some end up being at home.
Every once in a while, I
bring them, you know, I mean, they're little angels, so sometimes they turn into Christmas decorations for the holidays.
Okay, so the 19th is sold out. The premiere?
October 19th at the Fayetteville Public Library is a big gala, and I think they were going to, I don't know how many, few hundred people, and all of a sudden they doubled it and sold out. But there are additional screenings, free public screenings at the Fayetteville Public Library. I found out today that it looks like the day after, interestingly enough, the Fayetteville Gala on October the 20th, it's going to be screened at the Hot Springs Documentary Film Festival.
Right.
Ultimately, we'll end up on AETN and UATV. But there are there will be several upcoming free public screenings for folks to get the opportunity to see the film in its entirety at the Fayetteville Public Library, which is a fabulous place to screen. Great system.
Will people be able to eventually get this on DVD?
Yes, DVDs are being pressed even as we speak, and they will be available through the Fayetteville Public Library.
Are there DVD extras?
There are extras, as a matter of fact. Beth Mack did a film called Memories Up Among the Hills, and that's a series of interviews with some folks who have a long history in Fayetteville. A couple of them have passed away since we did the production. Mm-hmm. Andrei Dumchev, who was a Russian exchange student, did a little film called Fayetteville to You that won a contest. And at the end of the film, we have a few outtakes.
Excellent.
Fun.
And one of them involves Bill Clinton.
All right.
Perfect.
All right. Worth the DVD right there.
Absolutely.
We do know November 1st and November 6th are free screenings at the Fayetteville Public Library. There might be an additional date as well.
I think that there probably will be additional dates. And I look forward to that. I'm hoping to attend all of them. Let's just hope people enjoy the film as much as I enjoyed putting it together.
All right. Thank you, Larry.
Well, thank you, guys.
Larry Foley is the director and producer of the new documentary, Up From the Hills. It's a history of the city of Fayetteville. The sold-out world premiere of the documentary takes place Friday night at the Fayetteville Public Library. As Larry mentioned, there will be other showings at the library in November. This is Ozarks at Large. It is Monday, October 15th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellens. With me is Becca Martin Brown. She's features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Today's the 15th.
It is.
Oh, shoot. I've got to go pay my personal property taxes.
And if you filed for an extension with the IRS, today's your deadline to file your taxes with the feds.
Okay, so that's the bad news.
Deadlines.
The good news is that the 5x5 art exhibit opens at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale.
Opening reception?
No.
Nope. They just silent, quiet.
They just open, and you go and you pick. There's going to be like 400 little 5x5 pieces of work by artists like Zeke Taylor, tons of people. And you go and you eyeball what you want.
But you don't make the bids yet.
On November the 8th, there's a jazz soiree and silent auction where you go and bid. Mm-hmm. And violence does not ensue, but sometimes staring people down does.
Competition.
Antoinette and I usually go, and she's really good at staring people down. So it'll be
not surprised.
Go pick out what you want today. There's a spotlight talk at 1 o'clock at Crystal Bridges on Thomas Aikens, mm-hmm. Intersecting Art with Science. And tonight, a country music throwback, according to our music writer Kevin Kinder, Wayne the Train Hancock will present his AM radio-style sound at Chelsea's Corner Cafe in Eureka Springs.
That's worth the drive right there.
You know who this person
is?
Oh,
I do. I do indeed. I've got a couple of his CDs.
Okay, so why is he special?
Boy, he just captures the energy and spirit and just the essence of great honky-tonk country music.
All right. Well, the show begins at 9, and admission is free at Chelsea's Corner Cafe in Eureka Springs.
Wow. All right. Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
150 years ago, Union troops in southwest Missouri were reorganized into a force to be called the Army of the Frontier, which would consist of a Kansas division under James G. Blunt and Missouri divisions under James Totten and Francis Herron. Brigadier General James M. Schofield was placed in command, and on October 17, 1862, he ordered the Army of the Frontier to head south. With bands playing and flags flying, the Union Army invaded Arkansas, marching to the old Pea Ridge battlefield where Schofield established his headquarters in Elkhorn Tavern. On October 20, the troops departed, with Herron and Totten probing east of Fayetteville and Blunt's Kansas Division moving west to rowdy Confederate force at Old Fort Wayne in the Indian Territory. To learn more about Arkansas history and the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War, visit ArkansasCivilWar150.com. The Arkansas Civil War Sesquicentennial Commission is an agency of the Department of Arkansas Heritage. I'm Mark Christ.
Later on this Monday edition of Ozarks at Large, one last chance to win tickets to see the Avett Brothers tomorrow night at the Amp. We'll have a question that, if you answer correctly, could get you into a drawing that will take place tomorrow at noon for those last two tickets. That's in about 7 minutes. Spend just a minute or two in the halls of the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Academy of Fine Arts on an October Monday, and this is what you'll hear.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, this will be your first little song.
Students learning violin, piano, theater, choir, as well as flute, percussion, and more. Dr. Rosalie Walker-Russell, the executive director of the UAFS Academy of the Arts, says on a Monday in the fall, around 150 of the more than 420 students enrolled in the academy will be in the building on the edge of the UAFS campus. Thursday, October 25th, one of the signature events for the academy, the first of this year's Distinguished Artists Performances, will feature the Singing Men of Arkansas. Last Monday, I sat down with Dr. Rosalie Walker-Russell in her office, just a few feet from one of those violin lessons, and talked to her about the fall season and the upcoming Singing Men of Arkansas concert.
And really, the Singing Men are coming back by popular demand. I mean, you know, once you hear that group, there's nothing like an outstanding men's chorus. And they were very popular last year. They're doing what we're calling a tribute to the oldies and goldies. And so they're doing old-time, some gospel music, some favorite popular tunes. So they're doing things from I'll Fly Away to California Dreamin'. And I think it's going to just be a wonderful evening. It's part of our Distinguished Artists series.
You said back by popular demand. It sold out last year. There was not a ticket to be had.
That's correct. It was completely full. We were putting chairs in the back. And I expect it to be that way again. A couple of things. Our choirs, our choral program in the academy, many of the kids and the teens are performing with the Singing Men on two or three tunes. That fills the house. Then people have heard Singing Men now enough times in Fort Smith that they want to come hear them again. Then pianist Jonathan Story, everybody's favorite. He and I are playing some two piano music together from, we're doing It Is Well With My Soul with the Singing Men. We're doing Battle Hymn of the Republic, and a couple of other pieces together. So that's always a fun evening for me because we love doing, you know, multi-piano pieces are just fun to watch, and we just enjoy doing that together. So it should be a fun evening.
Now, as long as I'm here, I want to talk to you about something that's going to happen in February. You know, there are certain movies that the title tells you exactly what they're about. Snakes on a Plane is about snakes on a plane. Four Weddings and a Funeral includes four weddings and a funeral. In February, you have something called Four Pianos and Some Kids, which will have four pianos and some kids.
That's correct. we just get a little crazy around here. So Four Pianos and Some Kids. Pianist Jonathan Story, Jenny Law, Scott Carroll from Harding University, and myself, we're going to do a four piano concert, and it's going to be a mix of classical music, popular tunes, some musical theater tunes, some sacred tunes, and the kids. We're inviting some of our best kids that sing and dance in musical theater to sing and dance to some tunes that we're going to arrange. And so they'll just be a guest on our concert, but I think we're going to have a really fun night. That's the other event that's through the Distinguished Artist Series. So if you're purchasing tickets for Singing Men, you can save if you just go ahead and purchase season tickets to both of those concerts. And that concert's February 8th. It's a Valentine concert. It should be a fun night.
How are the pianos going to be arranged? You've got four, so are they going to be kind of, look like you may not know for sure?
Well, I'm thinking they're either going to be in a circle or they will be two and two with the keys out. And so whether you're sitting on the right or left side, you'll be able to see somebody playing the piano. We'll have to work with that a little bit after we get the four pianos on stage and see how that goes. It's interesting.
You know, sometimes when I see singing groups, choral groups, or an accompanist on a piano and a singer, they'll have to look at each other, kind of get the feel. When you've got four pianos, how important is it that you can see each other, or is it important at all?
It's important when you're not used to playing with each other on a regular basis. That's more important. We'll have some rehearsals ahead of time, of course. I have played with Jenny and Jonathan and Scott. I've, you know, of course, been to many of his concerts. I think that the four of us can come together fairly quickly, but it sure would help if we could see one another. So I'm hoping for that, not just sort of have to count and feel it. You know, you want to be able to see each other from time to time. So, yeah, we'll have to work on that.
You're already thinking spring?
We are. We've just now finished getting everyone enrolled. Well, I say we finished everyone. I've turned in my enrollment report, but we're still enrolling kids in private lessons and, you know, shuffling here and there. But basically, we're at 420 students for the semester. So that's a healthy 18% enrollment increase. As we roll into October, then what we do is we begin to prepare for spring so that by the very end of October, registration forms are online. You can download them and be ready to go. You know, a lot of kids, they want to get re-enrolled early. And, of course, we try to get our students to re-enroll. So if there are new students out there that aren't participating this semester and they think, gosh, I want in the spring, they need to be looking online at the end of October. And that would be at uafs.edu/academy. Or you can simply call us at 788-7252 or 7253, and we'll be ready to go. You know, we're expecting no let up as far as the enrollment in the spring semester. Some groups that are fairly new, our orchestra program, for example, that is divided into more than one orchestra, we expect those orchestras to just grow into the spring semester. So there will be some groups that will be larger than they are now. The kids that are in most of our groups will want to return. So we just encourage people to enroll early.
If you have 18% growth from now to next year, you're going to be over 500 students. Is that okay?
That would be great. You know, I continue to have these goals. You know, I had hoped that we would reach 400 students this fall, and we did. And, gosh, I would love to see us reach that 500 mark here in the near future. Fortunately, our building can still hold that many kids because they're not all here at once. And that's helpful. And virtually everything that we do is still on campus in terms of classes. We only have one group that meets off campus at this point. So virtually everything is still in this building on campus. A few activities over at the Breedlove building. So we can still accommodate more. So I'm excited. I mean, I'm just going to keep rolling them in as much as we can. So
Dr. Rosalie Walker-Russell is the executive director of the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Academy of the Arts. I talked with her inside her office at the Academy last week. If you'd like more information, you can go to uafs.edu/Academy.
In the first presidential debate, Republican challenger Mitt Romney kept President Barack Obama on defense. Our next debate is a town hall meeting where voters will control the questions. But which candidate will command the stage? I'm Guy Raz. Find out tomorrow evening when we'll bring you special coverage of the second presidential debate from NPR News.
Live coverage of the second presidential debate tomorrow night on KUAF 91.3 FM. Our live coverage of the debate plus the analysis that follows begins at 8 o'clock. Also tomorrow night, the Avett Brothers at the AMP in Fayetteville. And we have one more pair of tickets to give away for that show tomorrow night. So two tickets will go to one winner. And we're going to, in the spirit of brothers who play in bands, we'll make the question that you need to answer about brothers in bands. And if you have an answer or even just a guess, you can send it to ozarksatlarge.com. And you have until tomorrow's program. We will announce the winner at the end of tomorrow's program. So you'll only have a few hours to plan, but it's a great last-minute chance to get tickets to see the Avett Brothers tomorrow night at the AMP. As I mentioned, there are many bands who have had brothers in them. The Beach Boys, of course. The Everly Brothers. The list goes on and on. If you want to be entered in this drawing for the last two tickets for the Avett Brothers at the AMP, just tell me any of these three bands that are represented. The band that was represented by the brothers Liam and Noel Gallagher, or a few decades earlier, the band that was known for Ray and Dave Davies taking the lead, or the band from my college days that had Bob and Tommy Stinson. So all you have to do to be eligible for tomorrow's drawing for the last two tickets for the that we have to give away for the Avett Brothers concert at the AMP is just email us at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com with one of the three bands represented by either Liam and Noel Gallagher, Ray and Dave Davies, or Bob and Tommy Stinson. And to make it easy, we'll tell you who the bands are if you go to the Ozarks at Large Facebook page right now. Again, Liam and Noel Gallagher, Ray and Dave Davies, Bob and Tommy Stinson. You can register now to take part in an intensive 8-week fiction writing course that begins Saturday in Fayetteville. Each participant will generate one short story piece by piece to completion. The group meets Saturdays from 10 until 1 for location, cost, or more information, 966-5935. And then later this month, the Department of Mathematical Sciences at the University of Arkansas will host A Celebration of Mind, a mathematical wonderland with games, prizes, and activities about the beauty of mathematics and the world around us. That takes place Saturday, October 27th from 11 until 2 in the ballroom, the Union Ballroom on campus. The event is free and open to the public. For more information, math.uark.edu, or you can call 575-4682.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 15th of October, 2012. It's the birthday of the poet Virgil, born near Mantua, Italy, in 70 BC, who set about to write his epic poem, The Aeneid. He'd been working on it for 11 years, went to Greece, caught a fever, and died before he could finish. He asked that the incomplete poem be burned, but the Emperor Augustus ordered it preserved, and it became the basis of standard curriculum in Roman schools. It was on this day, 1764, Edward Gibbon, in Rome, walking around the ruins of the Capitol, got the idea to write his book, actually six volumes, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. Edward Gibbon, who became known as the first modern historian because he tried to write objectively, relied heavily on primary source documents, and made extensive use of footnotes. It's the birthday of the man who said, "We should consider every day lost on which we have not danced at least once." That was Friedrich Nietzsche, born in the Prussian village of Rücken in 1844. We don't know him so much for his dancing ability as for the fact that he said, "God is dead." Actually, what he said was, "God is dead and we have killed him." And it's the birthday of P.G. Wodehouse, born in Guildford, England, 1881, raised by a series of aunts. Could not go to college because his father had gone bankrupt, so he got a job as a bank clerk and started writing humorous stories. Woodhouse said, "My total inability to grasp what was going on at the bank made me something of a legend. Went into journalism, and as a journalist, he first came to the United States, fell in love with America. He said being there was like being in heaven without going to all the bother and expense of dying. Moved to Greenwich Village, 1909, started writing stories for the Saturday Evening Post about the manservant Jeeves, who is always saving his employer, Bertie Wooster, from some sort of disaster. People who knew Woodhouse said he was extremely shy and rather dull, never that funny in person. But in the course of his life, he wrote almost 100 books of fiction, wrote lyrics for 28 musicals. He said, "I just sit at a typewriter and curse a bit." Here's a poem for today by Carl Dennis entitled Tattoo. If the body is the house of the soul, what's wrong with a little home decoration more permanent than the drapes in the parlor or the fabric on the dining room chairs? A forearm, say, adorned with a tropical flower or with a palm tree under a deep blue sky, suggesting the body is glad to recall its stay in Eden, whether or not the soul regards that episode as relevant now. Or consider the young waitress who served you lunch just an hour ago, how her sleeveless blouse revealed a small heart on her shoulder, inscribed with two names, Dave and Gretchen, under a sprig of lilac. No need to assume she's failed to imagine a time when a boyfriend more congenial wakes up beside her, only to be reminded there was once a Dave who was all she wanted. Could be she wants to send a reminder to the Gretchen she may become, not to forget the girl who believed that holding on was a project worthy of all the attention that she could muster, as much a challenge as letting go. Tattoo, a poem by Carl Dennis from his collection Callings, published by Penguin and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Goddard College, offering low residency bachelor's and master's of fine arts degrees in creative writing. More at goddard.edu. Written by Joy Biles, produced by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
October is the month of KUAF's fall campaign. All contributions made during this month count toward KUAF's fall campaign goal. You can show your support right now online at KUAF.com. KUAF is supported by CertaPro Painters, serving residential and commercial clients with interior and exterior painting, plus interior design, deck and fence staining, and specialty finishes. Locally owned and operated by Aaron Lewis. Estimates and information available at 1-800-GO-CERTA or CertaProPainters.com. The Northwest Arkansas Center for Autism invites you to join them for their annual fall festival, October 23rd, from 5 until 7 p.m. at 2458 East Joyce Boulevard in Fayetteville. You can bring the entire family. There will be food, fun, games, and treats. Costumes, optional. Registration, however, required by emailing bhartman@nwacenterforautism.com. You can also call 871-7994. Again, the email address, bhartman@nwacenterforautism.com, the number 871-7994. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Southwest City, Missouri. And don't forget, if you'd like to be entered for those last two tickets to the Everett Brothers tomorrow night at the Amp, you can send your answer to the question to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. When we were trying to find an appropriate question to ask today for those last two tickets, thought we might ask something about North Carolina because that's where the Everett Brothers hail from, Colcord, North Carolina. Decided not to go with the North Carolina question, but had we might have asked, what is the state red berry of North Carolina? The answer to that is strawberry. adopted in 2001, as was blueberry, as the state blue berry in 2001. The state insect of North Carolina, the European honeybee, and just in case you were wondering, the state carnivorous plant of North Carolina is the Venus flytrap, thus adopted by the North Carolina legislature in 2005. The story behind that, the Venus flytrap, is found as a native plant only in stretches of North Carolina and South Carolina. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Antoinette Grajeda will join me tomorrow for a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. Have a great Monday.